This is the director's report, Director Susowin.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Hopefully, audio has been corrected.
Working good.
Hard to send stuff. I'll run through a whole host of issues, kind of in the spirit of what we've been doing. It's really the work we're focusing on right now. Budget is obviously taken on the biggest demand for us recently. I won't get into a lot of detail. You'll hear apt presentations from Nate and Morgan later with the detail and their expertise. I just wanted to do a little contextual setting at this point. This has been a ton of work. So primarily I want to compliment staff on a great job of coming up with these lists. They're unfortunately good at it. That's from a decade of being in lean times. And this is grueling, can be demoralizing work. We're lucky that we started with a high point because of the success we had in the legislature last year. That's also a little deflating in that the ink wasn't even dry and we started figuring out how to go the other way on cuts. And so staff really stepped up, did yeoman's work, and developed the lists that you're going to see later today. Heads up, I think we've talked to all of you a little bit, but the list is ugly. It's really ugly. And I just keep in mind, it's a zero-sum game. If we don't have a nice, easy, hey, there's a fluffy piece of work we can cut. If we take something off that list, we have to replace it with something that's going to be just as ugly, probably just uglier it depends on which your perception of ugly. The cuts have to come from somewhere. They're going to be big. At least the proposed cuts are going to be big. The other piece I wanted to do is put this in context of this is a very long race, and we're really at the starting line. This was an assignment from OFM, an assignment to cabinet agencies, strongly suggested assignment to non-cabinet agencies, which we're going to play in this game to make sure we preserve our ability to secure a good budget. This all gets rolled up and goes into a governor's budget, and that governor's budget will be released in December. We'll know a lot more information. We'll know a better idea where the economy is done in the next 4 or 5 months. We'll have a better idea if there's going to be any federal relief. So it'll be a different playing field. At that point, the governor releases his budget, and that's the start of the legislative session. That's where the appropriations occur, and that's where the real discussions will dig in. So there's a long ways between here and there. Having something on the list is important. I don't want to minimize that. If it's on the list, it could go away, and we need to be ready for that. But we're just starting the fight of making sure that our ugly list is not actually used, that things are not taken out of our budget. I think we're in pretty good shape. We had one of the reasons we were successful last session was a broad support from our stakeholders. That momentum is still there. They're still pushing on it. Also, the driver for this whole situation, COVID-19, is really increasing the demand for our work. We're seeing across the country unprecedented levels of people outdoors recreating. The outdoors are open for business. We are an outlet for people mentally and physically to get out there. If you add to that, you'll hear Nate's usual, the return on investment just economically of us. So we've got a pretty good platform to talk to the state about. We understand the direness of the budget situation, but we're really probably the last place you need to be cutting, because we can actually provide an outlet for folks for the very driver that's driving the poor economy. So I won't say a rosy picture or optimistic, but it doesn't necessarily have to be doom and gloom. I think we're in a better position than most to argue for the continued funding for our agency. Other things we've been working on a lot is furloughs. Strangely enough, it takes a lot of work not to work. We've lost 20% of our capacity just with one day a week furloughs. We have a lot of salaried people who put in more than 40 hours a week. And during that furlough week, it's really 32. So it's even more than 8 hours for those folks that we lose work. And then just the disruption in scheduling and having folks understanding what paperwork they need to fill out. How do you fill out a timesheet? And what about unemployment, et cetera? It's a big, as I said, there's a lot of energy goes into not working on one day a week. So I'm glad to say we're past that. We have 4 furloughs left, 1 per month for the next 4 months, much more manageable at a once per month. There's some flexibilities on the weeks before, the weeks after. It's just a much more manageable situation. So there'll be continued impacts to productivity, but not so severe as we've seen over the last month. Otherwise, the agenda mentioned an update on COVID-19. I don't have a lot more to add. We are still on a mandatory telework for our office staff. our field staffs are pretty much out there with new SOPs and protections to make sure that we're doing our part to prevent spread of the virus. We're starting to work on how do we get folks back in the office, our office folks. But it's looking like a pretty long-term process with case numbers rising and restrictions being reinstated. I'm not sure when we'll be back to full operations in the office. I also think we're starting the thought process of, well, what's the return to the office look like? We've learned a lot over this last few months. I have an entirely new picture on telecommuting than I had a couple months ago with a lot of positive aspects and some not so great. So how do we incorporate that into our new, what's the new life look like in the office environment? So we got to figure that out as we get people back in the office. I'll leave some minutes for the end if Amy wants to add that. She's doing the bulk of the work around COVID-19 response. Switching more to operational stuff, I'll start with wolves. It's that time of year where you hear us talk about wolves a lot. You've already heard some testimony today. So an update on where we are with wolves across the spectrum. You've heard that Togo, we had actually issued a lethal order for that pack early this year. That's a chronic depredation pack. It was basically a reinstatement of last year's lethal order. We've made a couple efforts at removing wolves. Those were unsuccessful. Our last depredation was in June, early June, and we aren't seeing the levels out there, the concern out there that we had, so we've moved to a formal evaluation period. I'll remind you, under our protocol, we have a threshold above which we consider lethal removal. Below that, we don't consider it. Above it, it's a tool available to us. It doesn't necessarily mean we use it. We implement that either in removals or attempt removals, and then we go into a formal evaluation period. That means we're not actively seeking to remove those wolves. If we change our mind and there's additional depredations and we decide to go back, we will provide notice to the public and an opportunity for them to weigh in and file whatever legal proceedings they should choose. So there will be another shot at that. The wedge pack, we also issued a lethal removal authorization. That with that authorization, it was authorization for one wolf. We did remove one wolf, one non-breeding female wolf from that pack. That automatically puts us back into an evaluation period to see if that has the change in pack behavior that we hope for. On the court front, it's the Huskinson case. We generally refer to it as the King County case, I think, when we've been talking in the past. This was the final elements of that case on the merits, on whether or not the protocol that we use for determining when lethal removal is an appropriate tool should have gone through SEPA, and whether or not the decision on the old profanity territory pack last year was arbitrary and capricious. We prevailed on both those issues. We had previously had a similar result on the SEPA issue through Thurston County, so we're feeling pretty solid about the decisions. We're not celebrating in victory. These are hard decisions. It's a tough issue. This is just the next step in the process, but it reinforces that we're doing a very thorough and thoughtful job is what it really means to me personally, and there's obviously those that would disagree with that. You all voted recently to deny a petition to do rulemaking to put that protocol, to probably oversimplification, but basically put the protocol into rule, develop it through an open rule process. You all denied that petition. The next step in that process is the petitioners have the option to petition the governor's office. They've done that. That starts a 45-day clock. The governor will either also deny the petition or direct the agency to do rulemaking. We've not really engaged with the governor's office yet. We'll provide whatever supporting material we can so they can understand the decision you all made and then allow for the governor's space to make his independent decision on what he thinks should happen with that rulemaking. Moving on, we actually finalized the North of Falcon rules. And so I think this is a spot that folks kind of lose track of. North of Falcon is hot and heavy early in the year. The negotiations are going on. That's when we hear about it. But once it's all wrapped up, there is a ton of work in getting that all into regulations and out there. And again, compliments to our staff who did a great job in doing that. And we wrapped that up and formally adopted those rules for the next year's fisheries package. We did that on June 22nd. Next issue, tribal hunting. So this is primarily tribes hunting off reservation in their ceded or outside of their ceded grounds. You'll remember last year, this is a long-term issue. This is a really awkward issue, frankly, for the agency. It comes down to a treaty right. We're in absolutely no position to determine a treaty right, but we're in a position to have to tell our officers what to do when they encounter a hunter, whether or not they're under a treaty or not. So we're in that unenviable spot of being right in the middle. And we've developed procedural guidelines for how we determine when a tribe can hunt outside of their ceded area under the treaties, a treaty tribe. A lot of controversy around that. We recognize we need to improve it. We've been working long before I got here. Last October, we had a summit with all the treaty tribes that were willing to attend. We thought we had a path forward to come up with a more consistent application of those guidelines. And in short term, that just fizzled. We've gotten nowhere with it. So we had briefed the Northwest Indian Fish Commission a week or two ago on a couple other issues. We were able to put this in that queue as well. We have commitment from their hunting committee, chaired by Sean Yannity, that they're willing to sit down with us and figure out, is there a way to actually advance that effort? We really need to get to a place where tribes understand how we're going to make our decisions on enforcement discretion, and everybody knows what information will be used, and create that consistency as best we can, recognizing each tribe is going to be a little bit different in the information they have available to demonstrate hunting off of outside the ceded area, but the process should be more consistent. And so that's our goal, and hopefully we will get there. You may hear we had a rough meeting with Skokomish tribe this week. They're pursuing a little different path, or at least that's what they've told us at this point. They want to develop MOUs with individual prosecutors on how those treaty hunting rights would be prosecuted. We'll continue to work with Skokomish as well. I'd sure like to wrap it all up into a single approach for everybody that's better. I think there's some concerns around, it's more than just legal, obviously it's game management as well, and that's where our expertise comes in. We met with co-managers on Lake Washington sockeye. They're really concerned. We're seeing terrible declines in those runs, so we're working with a number of tribes, Muckleshoot in particular, and we'll continue to work with that and Seattle Public Utilities to figure out how do we manage to avoid that run continuing decline. A lot of controversy there, particularly between us and the utility at this point, but I'm confident we're going to work our way through that. The WAFWA meeting, I think Commissioner Thorburn did a great job wrapping it up. She actually attended more of the events than I did. I saw her virtually in several of those, but every event I was in, she has already briefed you on. So I will skip over that beyond that. Great presentation we made to the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. This is an area where I really need to get, I think, more involved. Our staff do a tremendous job, but this is mitigation all up and down the Columbia. This is really a key piece of work for us, and it's my first real engagement with the group. So I think it went well. And again, hats off. Part of the reason I've been able to not be as engaged as I want to be is because we've got such spectacular staff working on it, doing really great work. We've done a number of, I'm going to clump them all together, a number of webinars in embracing the new high-speed crash course technology we've all gone through. We're using webinars quite a lot. So we've done a number of webinars on budget, obviously, with our staff, with externals, with the Budget and Policy Advisory Group. We've also just recently done, we did them on furlough, so folks knew how to manage through the furloughs, as we just talked about a little bit ago. And we also had one on red flag reporting. I thought that was worth mentioning, especially, again, with Commissioner Thorburn's report out. So we have a diversity advisory committee. We're trying to improve our culture here to make sure that it's a safe place. Through our diversity advisory committee, one of the things we heard is there needs to be a better way to report to management when they see activity that's inappropriate. So we've hired a third-party consultant. It's an anonymous tool. You can report online. We had Marvin Williams talk about it. He's our new diversity, equity, inclusion manager. The tool's being used. It's working well. We'll keep improving it. And I'm really, really satisfied and actually proud of where we are and the movements we're making. And Marvin is just knocking it out of the park. So I think we're in good shape there. And we'll continue with webinars. I'm back to the central theme there. strategic plan. You may have heard some concerns about whether or not we've really adequately reached the rural communities. So we're working on doing that, working with conservation districts and met with the Conservation Commission just yesterday to make sure we actually engage those folks. Right now, I think we've got a plan or working on the plan to make sure we do that. And hopefully it doesn't affect our schedule. I'll look to Commissioner Baker, but we're still hoping to get things wrapped up here in that September timeframe. Salmon seasons are proceeding or closing, some closing as planned through the rules. So some of the Puget Sound Chinook stuff closed Marine Area 1 for coho early this year because we had a small quota and they hit that quota. So it was, I think, a pretty good season for them while it lasted, but it lasted only about a month, which is unfortunate. So hopefully we can do better next year. Running down the list, mountain goat relocation started again. This is our last effort for relocating mountain goats out of the Olympics into the Cascades. That's ongoing. And you heard Commissioner Linville living in fire country and fire season. So far, cross our fingers, we're doing pretty good on department lands. We've got a few small flare-ups, but nothing. Everything's contained and under control right now. But it can change quickly, as Commissioner Linville said. So right now we're doing well and holding tight, crossing our fingers. I think that's all I will go through, but I would stand for questions.
Vice Chair Baker has a question.
Thank you, Larry. Off the wall question, Kelly. I was thinking about the budget and what you said about how we have, we actually are in a position to offer more to the citizens of the state than normal with COVID and that people are getting outside. On a kind of a related issue, at least here in Olympia, the Tumwater School District yesterday announced that they're not going to have classes in the fall. It's all going to be online, which is absolutely freaking out many of the people in this community. And I'm afraid that it's going to spread and that there will be very few school-age classes this year. Obviously, don't know that. The connection, though, is I'm wondering if this is something that we could ask for some more money for rather than taking all these cuts. And I'm going back to this spring and this early spring, where on social media, I read about something I didn't even know, which is that we actually, as Fish and Wildlife, offered our services to people and gave classes on what we do. And the crankiness on social media was not that we're doing that, because there was a lot of appreciation for that. What people were upset about was that nobody knew that we were doing that. And actually, as I'm talking, I haven't even confirmed it, so I don't know very much about that program. But what I understood is that there was both an academic and a sort of a PE component. So we teach kids about habitat, and then they go out and do some habitat thing. I'm just trying to be creative here. I'm coming up with this just as I'm talking. But is there a way for us to look at whether we can assist parents and especially working parents and beef up that program a little bit in this time of extreme need to reach out to kids and teach them a little bit about the things that we care about? That's my question. And is this something that anybody's talking about?
I don't think we've talked about it with quite that fine a point, but in general, yes. So I think, Nate, you'll hear from the budget that we have, like our Evergreens Jobs this year package has a backyard habitat at home. It's got a habitat on school grounds. It's an opportunity. It's really focused more on jobs and creating those jobs, but absolutely tweaking that a little bit to improve the educational side of it, further support it, I think is very doable. And I think we should take a look at, hey, we're in a different place, especially with this coming school year. Are there different things we should be doing on the educational side? Yeah. That would, I think, do well in the legislature, obviously.
Brad, one second. I see Commissioner Linville, then Commissioner Thorburn, and then you, Brad, if that'd be all right.
I just wanted to really quickly express my appreciation for taking the position of getting the rural voice heard in the strategic plan. It's not an easy task, and I really acknowledge that. And so the fact that that was taken so seriously, I just really, really appreciate that. And it's appreciated in